Hey, welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. We're back. Excited. Back
again.
Yep. With another series in Matthew.
Yeah. We were off last week. We did. Took a break. Now we're back.
I like it. I've enjoyed being in one book.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always, I mean, from a preaching standpoint, it's just way easier. I mean, it's, you know, it's not without its challenges, but I think the main challenge is just trying to think through a diversity of ideas, things you want, or things you're believing that the congregation needs to hear in the year. And at the same time, making sure you're always deferring to the text, right? Because, and I think the way that I've tried to navigate that is that we're not covering every single verse in Matthew. Yeah. So if there's an area of that particular chapter or whatever that I think will allow us to touch on something maybe we haven't in a while or something we have need in congregationally, then I just lean heavier into that, you know? So I think that part's helpful. But yeah, just from the, like, you know, letting the text guide you, it makes it way easier. You try to do that all the time, but when you have one book like that, it's really more straightforward.
You know where you're going next.
Yeah.
In Matthew.
Sure am. Yep. Working on the next one today.
Yeah. So. And I think that your, I guess your preaching style this week was a little different. Like it was a lot of storytelling,
right,
which I liked. And it wasn't this 3-point sermon.
Yeah.
It was a 1-pointer, in my opinion.
Those are really, you know, in the whole, you know, going to college for this stuff, part of master's work is the kind of different approaches to preaching, and that would have been what they would call a narrative sermon.
Yeah.
So you're very much, yes, telling a story, allowing the narrative approach to be what kind of how the message gets across versus, you know, something that's more kind of, you know, again, point by point or breaking down of the text in that way. So yeah, that was on purpose.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of The Chosen and how they do their, you know, take their artistic liberties,
right,
and, you know, the text doesn't say this, but we can speculate or assume because of the culture of that day.
Yeah, we can still very much learn something about, this week it's the leper in particular, we can still learn something about that leper by understanding, you know, ancient Near Middle East Jewish people in the time in Judea, what were they like? What kind of things did they do, right? That's kind of the approach we took, because it's no giant, you know, leap of faith or anything to kind of take a very normative approach to what a regular person would be like, just like we would do today to try to better understand somebody in the here and now, right? So, yeah, I think as long as we're, and I tried to be very intentional about this, as long as we're really clear to distance, this is what the text says versus, okay, now we're going to use our imaginations, which I said that several times in the in the sermon. We're going to use our imaginations to get a sense of things, but just understand this is not in the text, right? I think that's where we have to be really, really careful, because we certainly would not want to introduce something into the text that the text doesn't say, right? And that doesn't mean we can't explore some ideas from the text that the text doesn't say, but we cannot present ideas as if they're in the text,
correct,
right? So I think that's just the navigation line that, at least for me, it's the plumb line of, you know, right, wrong, you know, approach.
Yeah, you're not going to introduce something that's not in the text that's going to change the text.
Correct, yes. Yeah. We want to keep to the heart and the message of the text, for sure.
Speaking of the text, we're in Matthew chapter 8. It's a couple of verses.
Yeah,
so I'm going to go ahead and read it for our listeners. Chapter 8, verse 1. When he came down from the mountain, great crowds followed him, speaking of Jesus. And behold, a leper came to him and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, if you will, you can make me clean." And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, "I will be clean." And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go. Show yourself to the priests and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a proof to them." So give us a little background on what a life of a leper would be like.
Mm-hmm.
Because for us today, leprosy is it's not really a thing that we have to worry about.
Not in the Western world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, understanding the life of a leper is to understand the life of somebody who is incredibly downtrodden, you know, has had their entire life taken away from them because of this disease. You know, we can in many ways equate it to the AIDS crisis in the 1980s here in the West, that, you know, people, and really it was a span of time where, you know, this was very much the like, don't get near them, don't touch anything they've touched, you know, make sure you know, because, you know, we had a misunderstanding of some things about the disease itself, how it transferred, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, I remember that as a child of the 80s, you know, growing up in that time period and watching a lot of that. Now, I was a kid, so I didn't see all the inner workings of it, but I, yeah, I heard a lot of the debate around and how people were approached. So that's kind of a parallel to a degree, but probably on another level during that time period, because of course, you know, these people were sent away from everything they knew, and you know, we kind of did this narratively in the sermon, from their families, people they cared about, from their livelihood. You know, again, you think about an agrarian society and what you had to do to provide for your family. So you're not only like losing your family in the context of you're not able to be around them, you, if you're a man especially, you're not able to do the thing that is like foundational to who you are, provide for your family, which again, especially in that society, especially in the Jewish realm, and we think this person's very likely Jewish, right? This leper that's in this story. This is foundational to who he is, right? And this is all taken away from him. So he can no longer provide for his family. He can't work. He's sent to the leper colony, wherever that is. Probably somewhere not too terribly far from Capernaum. My guess is that a lot of the major cities had to have these camps. How far were they outside the city? We have no idea. And at least I haven't researched it enough to know exactly kind of the distance and what people felt, you know, level of comfort with. I would think that they were relatively close because there would still be some critical things that they would have to have. We know that some lepers still made their ways through the cities. I mean, we know that that happened. My guess is, too, when you think about the progression of a disease, as the disease progressed, you were not able to make your way anywhere. Sure. You know, there, you were sent to the camps there to die. And while you still remained somewhat healthy, you probably were able to go and beg in the cities, because this is what lepers became. I mean, they didn't have any way to support themselves. You know, we think about like a medical camp today and the way that that would operate, and there'd be a great infrastructure there to care for the people and so on and so forth. We don't know, but my guess is there was little to no infrastructure. And this was probably the leper having to take care of the leper. You know, and you think about that, that it's basically, you are experiencing the disease yourself, but not so bad that you can't do something for someone or care for somebody else to a degree. And you are watching the progression of the disease that you know is coming for you in someone else as you care for them. I mean, it's a nightmare on top of a nightmare in a lot of ways. So yeah, that's about the way I know how to sum it up from what we know and understand about, you know, what the disease did to people at the time. And, you know, it was a, physically, it was a terrible disease that would lead to, you know, horrific things like, you know, fingers and whatnot, toes, et cetera, falling off. Your nose. I mean, you could literally have your nose fall off. I mean, think about that, right? That's the progression of the disease. Yuck.
And so there's no hope.
You know, at that point, it's interesting to me that there's a process for going to the priest and showing yourself clean. I'm guessing that that's not from a like, hey, you got better. And it's very much a like, well, you had something and we thought it might be leprous, but you healed or you got better. Oh, okay, you can go, and it's clearly not this. It may have been some other kind of rash or some other kind of issue, you know, skin disease or whatever that did get better. So there's a process for you, but there's not a like, hey, you know, you were cured and now you can go check
there's
back
in. There's
not
an expectation to be cured. It's just that ritual that the priest has to go through from somebody who's unclean to clean. And so there was there were many ways that you could become unclean, touching blood and things like that. And mm-hmm. and if I remember correctly, that same ritual has to then take place. You have to go to the priest mm-hmm. and get cleared so that you can do your regular duties, that you can go to the temple, that you can go back to your family. And so here, when Jesus heals him, and we're getting a little ahead of himself, mm-hmm. he then goes to the priest. I can't even imagine that interaction, especially if it's the same priest. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, what? Aren't you the leprous
man? I know. I saw this before. Yeah.
And now he is cleansed.
Well, you know, the other part of this that I didn't mention in the first service and I did in the second is that the leper also had to put on the clothes of the leper, which was basically the rags. They had to grow their hair out. They had to look a mess, right? And part of this was sort of that early warning system that people would see coming and know to avoid you. Some of them had to wear bells, you know, that you would go and people would hear you coming. I mean, you just imagine the shame and, you know, just how awful that would be, the sound, how sick you'd be of the sound of that bell. Right.
Yeah. And a reminder every step that that you are unclean, that you can't touch anyone. And that was really one of your points to, I think, make us feel or empathize with this man of the idea that there was no interaction between other humans, the people that he cared about. And you used the example of COVID and just that small time frame that we had where we couldn't touch because we didn't know.
Right.
Or I remember Heather was actually pregnant during that time and she got COVID. And so we locked her in the room and I'm just kind of hanging out and I'm like, man, how do I go about this? And then I ended up getting COVID. And so she came out of the room because we both had COVID.
Right.
And Adeline was just running around and she was like, oh, everything's good.
It's good.
But it was hard. For that time period, a lot of people were depressed.
Right.
And we saw a rise in that particular health field of people needing counseling.
For sure.
And we saw it in the church. When we came back together and we were like, oh, we can finally
worship. We realized how badly we need one another and the proximity to one another. And, you know, again, we have to take some creative license there with the idea that this person was not touched for this entire time period. We don't know to what degree other people in the camp, you know, may have been providing some level of care or they providing a level of care. But as far as being touched by the people that mattered and meant the most to him, we know that didn't happen, right? That's no leap of, you know, giant leap of disbelief or anything that we have to take in the midst of that. So the fact that, and I'm sure we can get into it now, but the fact that Jesus touched him and yet Jesus did not have to touch him to heal him.
Yeah.
Because Matthew, as he records in the text, he really makes a pronouncement. And the leper comes to Jesus' feet as he's on his way down off the mountain, having preached the Sermon on the Mount, and is making his way to Capernaum. And on the way, this leper meets him there, you know, and this beautiful divine meeting, you know, this meetup of, you know, this man who's possibly heard of this prophet who's been teaching on the hillside, or, you know, again, maybe he's just brought there by God. You know, maybe he sees him from a distance and there's just something in him that knows there's something different. And who knows, right? My guess is that he probably caught word of it and he believed, I could be made well. This might be a prophet of God. This might be a man of God. This could be. And when he gets near him, he believes and he falls at his feet and says, I believe that if you're willing, you can make me well. And Jesus says, I am willing, right? And he pronounces him, he touches him, he puts his hand on him, but he touches him physically, but he then pronounces over him, I'm willing, you know, be well. I don't remember what's the exact verbiage. What's he say?
Yeah, he says, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean.
So be clean is the pronouncement, right? Is the words I was looking for. So, you know, it's cool though when you think about the lack of connection, the lack of touch.
Yeah.
And Jesus, of course, is not afraid. He has nothing to fear. He knows exactly how this is going to go. He's not afraid of leprosy because he knows his story, right? And he knows this is not going to be the kind of thing he's going to get or take him out or whatever. So he is able to touch him and place this piece of value on this person who has lacked that physical connection. and then pronounce over him with his power. Because we know the very next story is the centurion story, where Jesus heals, and he heals from a distance. Mm. You know, the centurion talks about, hey, I have people that are that I'm responsible over, and where I tell them to go, they go. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, of course, but he says, you don't even have to come to my house. I already know you can do this. And he's like, Jesus is like, I haven't seen faith like this anywhere in Israel. This is crazy, right? Right. I don't think he uses the same verbiage, but basically says, I'm willing, right? It's the same idea. Mm. So it's a really cool couple of chapters here we're in the midst of. This kind of subsection of our series on Jesus and the people is especially powerful because it really gives us a picture of the heart of Christ for us, for people, right? It's beautiful. So many beautiful stories.
And the imagery that I'm getting from the leper and the centurion, and then it goes on even with other healings throughout the other gospels, is that Jesus always meets people where they are and heals them because of their faith. And so as individuals reading this, you know, thousands of years later, Jesus meets us where we are.
Yeah.
There are experiences in our lives where Jesus heals us, not only physically, but spiritually. I think of the time where I came to faith as a child, and other experiences that I've had in my life where I have felt the presence of God and been healed from trauma or sin or anything like that. And specifically when I was listening to your sermon and double speed this morning, whenever you talked about Jesus touching him, I specifically remembered an instance in my life where I was in high school and struggling with some things, and we went on this youth rally in Baton Rouge, and my dad got to come with us, and you know, they always at the end you do the altar call and people are up there, and I was struggling, and I went, and I remember my dad coming and touching me on the shoulder, and that for me was this reassurance that God has put people in my life to lead me towards him, to help restore me, to restore that relationship that I had with him.
Absolutely.
And so for Jesus to be that person for the leper, for me, meant a lot, because I've been there as someone who is isolated, whether that's because of sin or my own doing. But now I'm made whole because of Christ.
Yeah, you know, you made kind of an interesting sub-point there that I think we ought to talk about at least briefly, is part of what Jesus loves us even in the midst of our brokenness, and we should come to him first instead of thinking we're going to clean ourselves up and then come to Jesus, right? Because what if the leper had done that?
He would have never been able to.
There's no opportunity, right? Yeah. He approaches him in his failure, in his brokenness. I mean, it's not really so much his failure, because it's not his fault he got leprosy. But he approaches him in his broken state, where the world looks at him as failed, right? Done for, right? And so he comes to Christ and trusts Christ to do what he can do, which is touch him and change everything, right? And I think that is definitely the message we need to convey to people that are far from God or struggling in their faith. You know, there's people out there that might be listening to this that say, yeah, you know, but I'm waiting on this, or I've got to fix this part, or I just don't think I'm there yet. Well, I mean, of course you aren't if you don't have Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not giving yourself over to Christ, you're right. You're not there.
No.
And you may not ever be unless you trust Christ to do the work in you. He's the one that can touch you.
Yeah. But I think that is a very logical way of thinking for humans.
Right.
I was reading through, we're about to start a series in Matthew from a Wednesday night connect group, and we're going to hit on the Beatitudes first. And one of the commentaries that I was reading was talking about, a lot of people see these Beatitudes as these high ideals of the way that we are supposed to live as Christians. But we can never fully attain that alone. The beauty of the gospel is that we get to be a part of this sanctification that Jesus is making us in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to experience what it looks like to be poor in spirit because of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, this is the way to live. but you'll never do this on your own. You can't clean yourself up and then come to Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's an oxymoron that, and if you're thinking that way, then you'll never come to Christ. Yeah. Because you say, I can fix it. I can be the Savior. I can get rid of my own sin. When Jesus is saying, I've already done that.
Yeah, I mean, it's work-based righteousness. Yeah. In from another perspective, you know, we say to people all the time, you know, we're saved by grace, and you know, you can't save yourself, and it's not by works, so that none should boast, etc. And I think a lot of times we only think about that from the perspective of the person who is sometimes like already saved, and like don't think that you keep yourself saved by how good you do, and etc., etc. But it's the same idea for the person who is still lost or far from God. They are practicing a works-based salvation mindset by thinking, I'll get myself cleaned up so that, yes, then Jesus could ultimately save you. Well, again, you're taking the wrong path there, right? Jesus will get a hold of your life when you give yourself over to him, and he will give you what you need to get yourself where you need to be. Now, you will always have to do that work and that effort, right? Yeah,
yeah. There's an effort on our part,
right?
For
but
sure.
You will never arrive. You will never get to the place where you're like, well, look, I fixed it all.
That's the beauty of the kingdom, and that's the question that we're answering tonight, which is Wednesday. Is the kingdom here, mm-hmm. or is it a future aspect? Well, it's both.
Right.
The kingdom is at hand. Jesus says he is the implementer of this kingdom. He's reminding us of where it all started in Genesis, what he wanted us to experience. And we will experience that here on earth in bits and pieces. But when he comes on his second coming, we will fully experience what it looks like to be fully sanctified in glory. Absolutely. And that's exciting to think about. Like, we get to experience here. We get a little glimpse, a little taste of it. And just enjoying that gets me excited for eternity.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the beauty of the kingdom is now and not yet, and the not yet part is exciting.
Yeah, it is. And here the leper gets to experience the now.
Yeah.
He gets that reuniting with his family and with his relationship with Christ. Like, that is exciting for him.
Jesus really and truly restored his health.
Absolutely.
In every way, you know, spiritually and physically and mentally and all of that by, you know, one touch, right? You know, one interaction with Christ. And today could be that one touch for somebody else out there. Jesus is still very much still touching people, changing people, shifting lives today for people that trust him. And that's really what the leper did. He trusted Christ. Yeah. He believed. So.
Any last thoughts?
Go do the same. Right?
Go do the same.
Yeah, go do the same. The examples are there. I don't know. I don't know that I have any real major big thoughts. You know, we're kind of in the middle of this gear up to Easter, looking forward to everything that's going to happen here at Galilee on that big weekend, or kind of the weekend leading up, and then the next weekend with our big Easter egg drop, Lord willing, if we can get a helicopter up in the air. And the next week, you guys have put together what looks like it's going to be a great Good Friday time, leading right into Sunday gathering together, which is just such an amazing time every Easter when we get to celebrate the resurrection and come together as a church family. It's a big, big time, you know, in our church, really churches across the world. But can't wait, man. How about you?
Man, the weather's getting nice.
Oh, man.
It's hiking season.
Just be careful, dude. This is full spring.
Yeah, I'll take full spring. As long as it's on Friday and Saturday, I'll take it.
Me too. I was thinking about it on my run this morning. I got done, and it was, you know, so nice in the 60s, and I just thought, man, I got to be careful about how much I love this right now, because I know two days from now, the run is going to be 33 degrees or some crazy.
Last week, we finally got a chance to go to Fort Yargo. We haven't been yet, and we enjoyed it, just spending some time out in nature.
Great
and
place.
Hanging out with the family. Nothing crazy happened. It was a nice, relaxing day. It was a good restful period. So good. I think that's going to be one of our spots from now on.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's funny. Yargo is a place, especially for campers. We do a lot of camping, but people come from all over, man, to go to Yargo. It's a very popular place in Georgia, probably because of proximity to some other things, but also it's a nice, you know, it's a nice park.
So. Yeah, I saw a guy. I guess he was getting his fishing gear together, and he he sprayed on some bug spray. And I was like, why does he need bug spray? Then I saw it's from New York, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. Because in Louisiana, compared to Georgia, I'm like, there's not many bugs here. Yeah, I bug spray, but
especially not this time of year. He's a little ahead of the game on that.
He doesn't know.
It is what it is. Those New Yorkers, God bless.
All right, well, we thank you guys for listening to another episode of The Breakdown, and we'll see you next week.